Mini episode 1655 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1655. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you, and we're here to talk NFL after week one of the 2023 season, and something that we've done the last couple of years. We have a FDH Lounge dignitary that we've worked into the mix, had him on at different times to talk football, sometimes just with me, sometimes with our other peeps, but the one constant has been that he and I have gotten together to discuss the NFL after week one. I think this will be the third year now in a row that we've done this, and I've settled into a nice groove with doing that. You can find him on Twitter at @dude_cav, where you can see his various thoughts on the world here. And again, Cav, as we always joke about here, different than my thing here, the life of the cavalry, which he is expert on, but in the process of leaving behind as we speak here. For me, I'm all about the Cav life, but the Cleveland Cavs here. So we have a love of the word in common, if for different reasons. Of course, we always like to get our plugs in for our FDH Lounge dignitaries and also for our guests, for anybody who's a part of the program here. And I know that if we were going to get a plug that Derek would like, it would be for the Twitter or X account at Chaotic Goodest. Go there and, of course, go right to the link tree where you will see everything that is the genius of a good friend of the show, Maya Master, and everything. And this is something that, again, if I was to give a plug that Derek would want, it would most certainly be that. And go there. You will not be disappointed. A lot of wisdom, a lot of great ideas constantly going on there, and everything that shows you the very, very, very bright future, of course, that Maya has in the world of sharing said ideas on various platforms. But bringing it here to our FDH Lounge dignitary, who it's good to have back in, Derek Joseph. And Derek, again, I know you got a lot of thoughts on week one. Very active, as it always is. It was my first time having Red Zone in the last couple of years, so I had my finger on the pulse all day watching it, and I'm sure you must have had a lot of thoughts as everything was going through over the course of the weekend.
Yeah, you know, great week one. The Cardinals lost. My fantasy team's horrible. And, you know, I lost all my bets. So, you know, welcome to football season. But, you know, everyone's trying to overreact to week one. And I've watched enough NFL over the years to really see that, you know, sometimes it's right, but I'd say most of the reactions are overreactions. I do think there's a few teams that came out dominant that are going to remain dominant through the rest of the year. On the NFC, San Francisco looked as much of world beaters as they were last year. Defense was incredible. Purdy still, you know, doesn't appear to be an aberration, appears to be just as good as he was the stretch last year. So, you know, I see them having success the rest of the year. You have Dallas, who that defense looks like world beaters. They play the Giants, so we'll see. I don't know, but they certainly have the talent. On the AFC, obviously Kansas City, yeah, they lost. They didn't have Kelce. Tony couldn't catch anything thrown to him, and obviously Jones was sitting out. I believe they'll have all of them back, and then hopefully Tony can catch in this coming up week. So I think Kansas City will be fine. Miami, that offense looks as crazy explosive as it was last year. We got that awesome shootout with the Chargers. That was awesome. I think both of those teams will do super well. We'll see how the Chargers do down the stretch. Everybody's already having a few injuries. Obviously, Baltimore suffering the worst, losing Dobbins. So interesting week one. I think week two, we'll start to see the cream rise to the top.
Well, all right, everybody, that's our super condensed week one analysis. But no, I will say that you didn't say anything there that I really disagreed with. But you must have been getting an earful about the Cowboys game there and the way that they went off. One can only imagine, Derek.
Yeah, you know, she likes to pretend she's a Cowboys fan, but I think I turned on a quarter. She wasn't watching. I was like, this is boring. Turned it off. But no, the Dallas. But besides, you know, my future wife, everyone else in Dallas in Texas is losing their minds over Dallas, thinking they're gonna have a substantial year, and they might. Again, that defense, it looks incredible. But what's their biggest factor every year? It's Dak. Will Dak actually be a playoff quarterback, or will he continue to be, you know, a 10-win quarterback for the rest of his time in Dallas? Who knows? But I think obviously, and you know, we kind of talked about it a little before off air, I think the biggest story is obviously what happened with Aaron Rodgers there. But and I know you were going to get to that, but the only thing I'll say with that is I do think the Jets, that defense looked incredible. I don't know if it was just Josh Allen just throwing it to everything, but yeah. I think that Jets team is pretty good. I know, obviously, Zach Wilson's the big asterisk, but I think they're better than some of us may have thought.
Yeah, that is possible. I will say, in looking at it here, that I mean, it the story of the weekend is obviously what happened with Aaron Rodgers. But as I said to you off air, that's because we're in a celebrity culture. I think the most substantive part of the weekend was the troika of AFC powers going down: Buffalo, Kansas City, Cincinnati. We'll get to that. And interestingly enough, the Aaron Rodgers story segues into that because that's one of the three games where one of the big guys went down. This is one of those things watching that game there. I just have to say that because of the kind of guy that I am, I was immediately texting beloved FDH Lounge dignitary and Sportsology proprietor Russ Cohen. And I asked him, so what was your favorite part of the Aaron Rodgers era in New York? Just because I can be an a-hole. And I don't think he enjoyed my text very much. But again, I was looking at it like this could be the whole Norma Desmond thing all over again, like it was with Brett Favre. But I mean, little did I know. You know, I just thought it could be a year that could be a little bit disappointing. And it didn't work out well for me where in my one fantasy league where I waited a long time to draft quarterbacks and he ended up being the top one that I had. Got to hope that Matt Stafford is for real after looking at him this weekend. But the Jets, yeah, I mean, that defense is all that. And again, Breece Hall obviously is back and, a receiver.
Garrett Wilson.
Yeah, and Garrett Wilson, who was going to be the best receiver that Aaron Rodgers has had in the last several years, now that's not going to be the case. But it's a thing where I believe it was FDH Lounge dignitary Ben Chu that texted me like, oh, Nathan Hackett having to craft an offense for a short guy, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, we can talk about them too. Denver, I think, looked better, yeah. But I don't know if Sean Payton and Russell Wilson will work, honestly.
Yeah, and that's we may get back to that one a little bit later. I will just say this. I mean, I don't know what your sense of it is, but like the thing with like Sean Payton leading off the game with an onside kick, like he's one of the biggest look at me guys in the league from my perspective. Do you get the same sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is just shock. It's an interesting strategy. I don't really know what too much to make of it. I mean, they obviously looked better. I think the onside kick was a little wild, but that defense is pretty good, and they were that was their really starting point last year. So I don't think it was that wild of a move. I do think him going to Denver in general was odd. I'm a little salty because I really thought the Cardinals were going to get him, but you know who knows how that would have been. But yeah, I don't know. Him and Russell Wilson, Sean and Russell, I don't think that's going to be the same beautiful pairing he had out there in New Orleans.
Yeah, well, unlike Nathaniel Hackett, he at least has a good track record of working with short guy quarterbacks, but I don't know if Russ at this stage of the career is going to be the guy to work with him. It'll be very interesting to see, but as far as what Hackett's going to have to do in New York from here on in, this deal with now going with Zach Wilson, going back to him, That's going to be a thing where, again, it's really going to put the defense and the rest of the team to the test. Having said that, the offensive line was something of a question mark coming into the season. So if they can't protect him that well, then that's going to basically just kind of doom them, because they're going to be in a situation where they're having to kind of overcome whatever they get from him, and that's going to put a real ceiling on them. Like, if they make the playoffs, one and done. That being the case, it feels odd to be talking about Buffalo in the same way. But Buffalo with Josh Allen, this is a situation here where I think it's very, very simplistic to say regression, because it's a couple of bad games. They just happen to be back-to-back. That stinker against Cincinnati in the playoffs, this game here, and the whole thing about what's between his ears that was kind of, I think, the whole source of the whole Diggs controversy in the offseason. And they're in a situation now where there's a lot of people saying that maybe the window is starting to close on them. I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I think they're going to be a contender for the next couple of years. I think they'll be making it at least to the second round of the playoffs the next couple of years. But as far as their best look at a Super Bowl, you look at them right now. Again, you don't want to make too much out of week one. I know that's your mantra, and I believe that as well. But, I mean, the onus is going to be on him to prove, I think, in the time ahead that the window is still open. Because increasingly over time, he's not looking like the same guy, and I just can't put my finger on why.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to decision making with Josh, and he puts himself in some wild situations. But I don't think there's regression. Maybe the lack of progression is a little more apt, but I don't think he's getting worse. I think he just is not improving the weakest points of his game, which is his, you know, sometimes boneheaded decisions that, you know, when he's scrambling, or like we saw in the Jets game, when he tries to just throw a bomb in the double coverage. I think they'll right the ship. I think they have a strong head coach over there. I'm dropping on his name, even though I know
McDermott. He's a strong coach, definitely. McDermott is strong. So I agree with you on that. Now, there's a thing too, and talking off here to FDH Lounge dignitary Johnny Adams, we were kind of looking at, I've been banging on this for a while with Buffalo. Like, what are they thinking? Like, not having a legitimate running back situation there in the backfield. Kind of the same thing the Bears are doing with Justin Fields. Like, oh, if we have a mobile quarterback, what do we need a running back for? Which I think is an asinine way to look at things. So if he had a more legit running back situation there, I think it would do something for him. And as Johnny pointed out to me, accurately so. Such a drop-off after Stephon Diggs among their receivers. So at the same time that I'm kind of banging on him for what's happening with Josh Allen, I think they could be doing a lot more to support him, Derek, with the personnel around him.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I don't know. I think the league's changing a lot. I mean, honestly, week one kind of changed my thoughts on this. But going into this season, I was subscribing to the theory that the running back is starting to become obsolete, at least in its current state. I thought a lot of people were talking, and I agreed that, you know, it will evolve into more of a hybrid position, a situational position where maybe you're doing a run every once in a while, but catching, you know, throwing them in, receiving running backs should become more the norm. It's a position that'll phase out partly due to money. You know, you've seen it a lot in the league with guys like Zeke and stuff. You know, they pay these guys. And, you know, other than the occasional Adrian Peterson every once in a while, they can come back from an injury. A lot of these guys get injured and they're never really the same. So, but after that week one, I mean, aside from the Miami LA shootout, there really wasn't a ton of, you know, explosive passing plays, at least from what I saw. I saw a lot of defenses stepping up, a lot of secondaries really being able to keep lockdown receivers and stop, you know, quarterbacks making crazy throws. So, you know, from I was saying it was going to be a pass heavy league and the running back was gone, but after week one, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think again, you can't really draw any kind of conclusions yet. But I think you're right about that as far as what the first weekend looked like. And sitting there with Red Zone, I will tell you, and again, you know, feeling kind of distant from my hometown Browns, as we have covered on the show previously, here, so I've defaulted to rooting for the Dolphins, who I have a long-time affinity for as well. So, man, I was going out of my mind watching that Chargers game. It was on a weekend where I wasn't doing so great on my picks. That was one of the ones that I nailed, not least of which because I'm fading the Chargers a little more than some people are, because that just still strikes me as kind of a Stars and Scrubs roster more than most people think.
Yeah.
You know, that I kind of don't get the whole thing of where everybody's so much in love with the Chargers. I mean, I think they're at least a borderline playoff team. Don't get me wrong, but I think, you know, to the degree the rest of the world looks at them versus, I did look at Miami coming into the season as potentially a Super Bowl contender. I still had them behind the Bills in the division, but I'm thinking that I might have been a little hasty on that because, yeah, looking at Miami offensively, and again, they didn't get to show it with Fangio yet the first weekend here, but that defense is going to be looking a lot different. And then again, you're going to be getting the big reinforcement in the secondary come December. So, yeah, I mean, that was an interesting kind of outlier for the weekend, a very, very exciting game in the 4 o'clock window. And it was really something where, like you said, the rest of the weekend, it was basically more of a grind in a lot of the games here. And the one thing I will say about the bell cow back in the league, and that is something that's really been on the wane, at least slowly, since probably about 05. And it's kind of maybe accelerated since then as far as the death of the bell cow. But as far as the role that it can still play when a team has one, I think of the different elements that happened in the game with the Browns and the Bengals. And again, I didn't see as much of that as did most people in my hometown because I was more so on the red zone. But I watched enough of it to see that among the different elements here, especially in the first half, you had both defenses getting to both quarterbacks. It was a little bit of a rain and slop kind of a game. But one of the things that I think was most decisive there, the Bengals, who I really felt like in the offseason should have moved on from Joe Mixon, gotten somebody in the draft, get younger and cheaper. They chose to stick with Mixon, and I think that's going to be a mistake for them versus Nick Chubb. I've been saying it for years, the best running back in the league. And I feel like on a day when Watson didn't quite have it all going on, I don't know that it wasn't as bad as what people said on Twitter in the first half, because I went back and I rewatched it on NFL Plus subsequently, and he was hurried on a lot of those throws. But it was like a good enough performance from Watson. They're going to need him to be better than that, although that defense is absolutely lights out with Schwartz in there. It's night and day from that bum Joe Woods. But Nick Chubb, that's the kind of a thing here where if you're a contender and you got a guy like that, that strikes me, Derek, as something that can set you apart, because there are not a lot of guys left in the league that are like him.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. But again, I think the, I don't know. I mean, the bell cow idea is interesting. I mean, and obviously there's the theory, obviously, in the thought process, you know, use the run to establish the pass. But yep. I just think, at least from a GM's perspective, right? Like, why pay all this money to someone to, even if, you know, they could be a game breaker, but they get injured so much. And, you know, often when you have someone that good, like a Chubb, they, you know, in their extension year, they want a lot. Do you want to pay them that much when you could probably get a few other positions that will definitely pay off, just because with just the lack of durability on running backs long term? But I do think something interesting I noticed with both the Lions and the Eagles, talking about running backs, mm-hmm. is both those teams stacked. Like, I think both of them have four running backs, at least that rotate through. Yeah. And I think that's an interesting concept, especially when you look at the names on both of them. I think, and it's ironic because obviously the Lions have, they took,
They got Gibbs. I think they reached on him a little bit. Yes, in the 12th pick.
They lost Swift to the Eagles. That's where I was going with that thought.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Swift and Penny, both of whom I drafted in one of my leagues here. And to my frustration, they're still feeding the ball to Gainwell and Scott for some reason. But that's a thing where, I don't know, I mean, this is going to sound odd for me to say in a year where Philly is coming off of a Super Bowl appearance, but I do buy into the notion, the traditional notion, that you got to get enough carries to get something of a rhythm. So, I mean, I could see splitting it, and the way that the league has been evolving since about 05 or so seems to be sort of like the 2/3, 1/3 model, and where your speed guy profiles is more of a third down back. Maybe he'll see some action on some other downs as well. But you start trying to feed more than two mouths in a game here. That's a thing where, again, I just feel like on a rhythm basis, that's something that might set teams back, because you've got the fresher legs, but that's an interesting thing. And these are the type of questions I love to ponder, you know, as you sit here and you make the scale motion with your two hands here. You know, what's going to weigh more, the fresher legs or the rhythm? And I tend to come down more on the traditional side, that the backs that are in there are going to need enough carries to get into a rhythm.
Yeah, I mean, fair. I don't know. I look at the last decade of Super Bowls. I mean, I can't think of one where, you know, a running back was even in a discussion of, you know, the most valuable player, even whether it's the league or the game. I mean, you can go back and say that I think Zeke's first year with Dallas, they had a monster year, and mm-hmm. he was an absolute, you know, killer. You can go to Saquon with New York. You can go to who's the Rams had. I don't think he's even in the league anymore.
Gurley, yeah.
Yeah, all three of those guys. I mean, now, like, it's been a few years, but one isn't even in the league, and then the other two, I mean, we don't even talk about, really. And those were, you know, the best running backs to come out in a while, at least in terms of, you know, yardage and touchdowns. And I think that was before the league completely embraced the pass-first idea, aside from, you know, a couple coaches here and there. But yeah, I don't know. I think the running back by committee, at least from a team building sense, and GMs really need to, you know, the money piece, I think, is going to play into it more and more. Players are getting more money, you know, they're getting more bargaining power, which I think is great and good. I think they should be paid, you know, fairly for what the team gets. But when you consider that, is a GM really going to want to spend, you know, 10, 5, 20 million a year on a running back that's going to, you know, could tear their ACL week 7 and then they're gone? I just think, I think that's going to drive a lot of the change. But we'll see going into week 2. If the passing games don't get up, and I do attribute some of it to Russ, but if the passing games don't get better, especially from those top tier guys we mentioned earlier, yeah. Allen, Burrow, I guess Mahomes, but I wouldn't really throw him in there. It'll be interesting if that doesn't happen, how these offenses will look come, you know, week 8.
Yeah, and I will say, too, that this is a thing where when you look at how Burrow played again, the rust clearly hurt him a lot. You look at it, hindsight's 20/20, but they really shouldn't have had him playing last week, because I know they thought on paper it was their best chance to win, and clearly on paper it would have been, but in the circumstances of it, and again, with their offensive line, I mean, Myles Garrett has always been a problem for them, and again, with the super stacked defensive line that the team has now, again, it's a really fluky statistic that the Browns have been dominant against the Bengals the last couple of years, because the Bengals have been a far better team than the Browns to this point. And now it's at a point where, again, you know, they could both be playoff teams this year. I thought that they were both coming in. I picked Cincinnati to win the division and actually to win the Super Bowl, and I'm not necessarily backing off of that yet. But when you're looking at the three big Titans in the AFC, which, of course, does not include the Titans, because I actually picked them for last in the AFC South, somewhat controversially. But between the Bills, the Bengals, and the Chiefs, I actually think that for as much as people were hyperventilating after Thursday night, that the Chiefs probably came out of this better than their two counterparts atop the other divisions from last year, because, again, as you noted off air, a couple of asterisks here, no Kelsey, no Jones. The one thing that I would find to be alarming for Kansas City in looking at this here is that with no Kelsey, boy, were they exposed. I mean, I know that, like, they made it through last year, and I was kind of a little bit befuddled with their Super Bowl run, because I would have just assumed that, like, somebody else would have stepped up to some kind of degree, as opposed to basically a committee of guys stepping up kind of circumstantially here. This guy came through and was needed to make a play. But, I mean, boy, you take Kelsey out of that lineup. And again, Kadarius Toney might as well retire from the league after the game that he had, but nobody else really distinguished themselves either. So, I mean, if I'm Chiefs fans, that's the one thing that's sending a cold chill up my spine. What's Kelsey now, like 34? I don't expect any kind of a drop off, but man, oh man, Derek, I mean, he might be one of the two or three most indispensable players in the league based on how that offense looked without him.
Yeah, and I don't disagree. I do think I'm pretty hot on the Lions, though. So I don't think that game was as much of an aberration as people kind of reacted. Yeah, I have a Super Bowl future on the Lions. I think that's, you know, part of it came down to value, but part of it I do think is the story. I think they improved a lot. I think, you know, I think there's a big mental aspect with that team. You know, I'd be curious to see how they keep going with this, because I'm pretty high on the Lions. I don't think that was a fluky win. I think they played very well. They were coached very well. It's odd to say that Andy Reid got out coached, but I'd make that argument. But I do want to, as much as that game, you know, was interesting, I do want to talk about one of the other kind of ones that was on my mind. Okay. And that was the Bucks Vikings, because I'm really curious your thoughts and whether you think, you know, Baker finally found his home, especially, you know, I'm curious your thoughts as you know, a former Baker stan. Yeah. And then aside from just the Baker piece, did Minnesota just completely fall off and, you know, they eked by a bunch of wins last year and, you know, that's why they got to where they are, or if, you know, that was just an aberration and they're gonna come back strong next week?
Well, I'm glad you set it up the way you did, because I had one more thing I wanted to say about the Lions, and that can tie into what you said about the Vikings. I think the Vikings are a prime regression candidate here. I think that's one of the reasons I have the Lions winning the division. I have the Lions going to the NFC Championship game, not least of which because I was a little bit suspicious of what the health was going to be of Brock Purdy at the beginning of the season. I was wrong on that. And I was a little bit suspicious about year two. Is he going to be for real? Looks like I was wrong about that as well. Nevertheless, Detroit was my pick before the season to go to the NFC Championship game. And now you have me very, very, very curious. What'd you get the Lions at for the Super Bowl? What was the price?
Plus 2,800.
Oh, boy.
Which I know it's come down to, I think, plus 1,300 now.
Okay. Oh, my God. That is an incredible value. You did excellent on that one. Yeah, 2,800, because I was high on them before the season as well. I will say this, that it looks like I should flip-flop basically my estimation of the other two teams in the division that played each other. I thought the Bears were going to sneak into the playoffs here because they did a good job of filling holes in the offseason. But I was very critical of them. Again, they didn't really fill the hole at running back. And I'm not saying that that's the whole reason they got exposed by Green Bay. And I wasn't sure what to make of Green Bay with Jordan Love. But, yeah, it looks like where I put the Bears in as a wild card, it looks like I can remove them and put the Packers in. It's only week one, but both of those teams look kind of indelible as far as what they're going to look like going forward, I think. If there are teams where you could trust the image that they left, those would be two of them. I don't know how indelible the impression was for Minnesota or Tampa Bay. Minnesota's going to lose some of those games that they won last year. This is a classic example of one that they would have just kind of snuck it out and just kind of fluked it out. As for Baker, again, and it's a thing where, and I will say this, and it's so funny to hear all these people now being hipsters on Sam Darnold as the guy who Kyle Shanahan could rehabilitate, because I said in 2018 I wanted the Browns to take Sam Darnold, and I have always clung to the notion that he was ruined by the Jets and by the Panthers. I don't know if he's salvageable, but it's so funny to hear all these people who called him a bum over this period of time, I think inaccurately, now saying that Shanahan could rehabilitate him if something happened to Purdy. But as far as Baker goes, look, I mean, he's had games like this before. We've seen it. The first game that he signed with the Rams, the playoff game against the Squealers a couple of years ago. I mean, you'll get this from him. But consistency, how he carries himself, I haven't seen anything of him being humbled to the degree that he needed to be. So he was a guy where, again, for a year or two in Cleveland, I allowed myself to think I was wrong about him. But in the end, I wasn't. In the end, there were better options for the Browns at quarterback. I was right about that, even when I thought I was wrong. So, yeah, I wouldn't read too much into that. I think that's an aberration. If you're looking at week one aberrations, I don't think you could do anything better than that, because Tampa Bay is just a team where, again, I foresee them having a very, very bad season. I will say this. Team that I picked to win the division, a division that I think is going to be a historically bad one, but a team that I picked to win with, I think, 7 wins, the Atlanta Falcons. And I'm not saying that because I'm a believer in Desmond Ridder. I'm not saying that at all. But with enough other pieces that they have there, and again, you see Bijan Robinson week one, we talk about the bell cows here. Could they have made better use of that pick getting a quarterback? I think they arguably could have, especially if they had traded up. But you look at them right now, and again, that's a situation where in that division, that old saying, the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. What do you think about that, the possibility of the Falcons possibly being the king of the division?
I mean, I'll call your Falcons and raise you the Saints. I don't disagree that division is going to be awful, but I would pick the Saints to win that division. The reason I say that comes down to the quarterback. Derek Carr isn't the best quarterback ever, but he's a lot better than Desmond Ridder. And I think, Derek Carr, all he needs to do is be a game manager, and in that division, they can make the playoffs. The Falcons, they did look awesome. I think a lot of that comes down to Carolina's awful,
yep,
and that dynamic running back duo they now have in Bijan Robinson and I believe Aguilar is the other guy's name.
That's right.
They both look dominant. But going back to our running back conversation earlier, all it takes is, one of them to get hurt, and which is going to happen, especially they're going to run the hell out of the two guys since, Desmond Ridder is Desmond Ridder. I don't know. I think it'll be tight, but in those close games, I think it comes down to quarterback experience. I think Derek Carr leads the Saints to a division title.
You're far more in line with the rest of the world, that's for sure. Because if there's a consensus view out there, it would be that it's New Orleans. And for me, there's just a couple things where I've always been kind of suspect as a head coach of Dennis Allen, because it didn't go well in Oakland. So I look at that. I look at a roster that's kind of aging and has some overpaid guys in a bunch of different places here. So I'm not really in love with the roster. I'm not in love with the Falcons roster top to bottom either. It's all relative. But this is one of these things here. Again, I will reference FDH Lounge dignitary John Adams, because he's always tickled by a reference that I will make on this here. I had seen this years ago, an obscure geopolitical reference that Brazil is the country of the future and it always will be. So I love to paraphrase that for people. And as Johnny said to me the other day, Kyle Pitts is the tight end of the future, and he always will be.
Yeah, he left a lot of fantasy owners wanting, to be sure.
Yeah, yeah. Like every year, and man, there aren't a whole lot of guys more physically talented than him. Although, as I pointed out to Johnny, you know who else was a first-round tight end pick? Not as high, but David Njoku was as well. And David Njoku is a guy who on paper should have done a lot more than he's been able to do the last couple of years. So sometimes, you can have the hands and the athletic ability and everything like that and still not be able to put it together consistently. But, consistency is going to be something that, again, you're not going to see a whole lot of out of the NFC South, because that is just a historically bad division. I will say the AFC South, maybe this is where I put on my hipster hat here a little bit, because that's a division. I'm not afraid to wear the fedora on this one, Derek, because I think this is a division that is quietly getting better. I mean, Houston quietly filled a lot of holes in the offseason. I think D'Amico Ryans is going to be a very, very good head coach here eventually. Indianapolis, they're not going to do much right off the bat with a raw quarterback. And, of course, he got hurt too. And again, they're stupidly allowing Jonathan Taylor to be a holdout here at this point rather than just paying the man. They have filled a lot of holes on their roster too. Ironically, again, I'm more down on Tennessee than are a lot of people. Jacksonville, we already saw it last year. They're a legit contender in the AFC. So the fact that Indianapolis played Jacksonville pretty tough, I wasn't surprised by that. I was surprised that Baltimore was able to pull away from Houston, because in a week where I stupidly went mostly with favorites, my 1,000-star gold-plated lock of the millennium for NFL Week 1 was actually Houston plus 10 over Baltimore. Didn't quite live up to it there. But what do you think? Am I being a little bit of a hipster about the AFC South? I'm not saying that they're going to be a monster this year, But I think that the teams in that division are coming quicker than people think they are.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's the craziest notion. I mean, like you said, I mean, Jacksonville's going to, I think, walk their way to winning that division. But I don't disagree. Selfishly, I want Houston to have a terrible year because the Cardinals have their pick. Uh-huh. But, you know, I don't disagree. They definitely filled some holes. The biggest thing they still lack is, I think, a quarterback. I don't think they hit their mark there. But then, you know, the Colts, I think Anthony Richardson got that crowd as hyped and is probably happy for that and hopeful for the Colts that they've been since, you know, Andrew Luck's random retirement. So it's not a bad notion. I could see the division getting a lot better over the years, but I don't know. It's an interesting one. They've just been such historically bad teams for a little while, and Jacksonville seems to have figured it out. It's interesting. I don't know. I think it's an interesting notion. I don't think you're totally tinfoil hat. I think there's a lot of legitimacy to your thoughts there, but I don't know if I'd give them I don't know if I'd say the AFC South's my up and coming division.
I think more so in the next 2 years or so, I'd say. I'm not necessarily saying for this year, but I think the teams in there, I think Houston has a chance to be closer to 500 than anybody thinks. Although, again, they didn't really show much evidence of that the first week. And as I've had pointed out to me, they really should have done more to beef up a wide receiver core and give C.J. Stroud something to work with. I cannot fight that notion at all. And that's the thing where, again, yeah, Jacksonville getting it together. I'll just say on a personal note, very happy for Tony Khan. He's brought a lot of joy into my life, bringing AEW into the world the last couple of years here. So he deserves all the good things he gets in Jacksonville. Happy for him. Trevor Lawrence, again, last year really kind of turned the corner. It's funny how getting away from Urban Meyer was able to do that for him, like flipping a switch. And Doug Peterson, again, is somebody that has had the Midas touch with being able to get that team going. But looking here again, as we're talking about teams that are having not a lot of success, like a lot of the teams in the AFC South haven't the last couple of years, let's bring this here to, and again, our week one NFL power rankings available at the fdhlounge.blogspot.com in the usual place there. 32nd here this week, something I would consider to be very, very uncontroversial. The Arizona Cardinals, 32nd. Now, it's always a little bit fraught whenever you're talking to somebody dealing with their hometown team, so it will sometimes be a different perspective. But as far as a team that took Browns cast off Josh Dobbs, a guy who didn't make their final roster, and they turned around and were like, let's start this guy week one. Let's go with him. So they don't even really appear to be overtly trying a whole heck of a lot here. So it's an interesting notion to me, the notion that they wouldn't be the worst team in the league, because most people think they're just outright tanking it.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, there definitely are those discussions, tank for Caleb Williams. But, you know, we also have Houston's pick, so I'm first rounder. There's not a total incentive to tank. But I will say, I think that defense makes – I think how well – our defense played kind of makes it seem we're not the worst ranked team. Yeah. I think, and ironically, we have the toilet bowl coming up this weekend as the Cardinals play New York. I think if the Giants stomp on the Cardinals or beat them, you know, pretty handedly, then yeah, the Arizona probably is the worst team. But between Carolina, New York, Arizona, I think Arizona's defense looked phenomenal. They were, if you look at just performance, if you look at fantasy points, whatever metric you want to do, they performed on, had the same performance as Philadelphia, maybe not as good as Dallas, but they were a top tier defense that first week. So if we're going to say what's the worst team, I wouldn't say it's a team that had a top performing defense, but we'll have, you know, we'll get that answer during the toilet bowl when they play New York this weekend.
I would just say too, that they were doing that against Washington. Which, again, I've buried Washington more than most people this year. I have them as not even being in the top 30 of the league either. So when you got Howell at quarterback there, you know, you're accomplishing something by shutting down any NFL quarterback, but maybe not a whole lot if it's him But I would say,
yeah, that's fair.
And looking at this with the Giants, what I would say would give you some degree of hope, perhaps. One of the terms that I like to refer to over a period of time on the show is I will slap on myself that old Obama term of the bitter clinger. That's kind of how I am in my thoughts, man. It takes a lot to peel me off of when I've come to a conclusion about somebody. I never thought Danny Dimes was anything other than a fraud. Last year, again, he did enough to joke his way into a four-year, $160 million contract that is looking like one of the great albatrosses in league history at this point. So, you know, you got him at quarterback for the Giants, so that is not necessarily the mismatch for Josh Dobbs that it would be for any other team, perhaps. But, yeah, it's going to be wild to see how they end up matching up with each other. This whole thing about Williams potentially going to the Cardinals next year, the thing that I find interesting is that isn't he working with Cliff Kingsbury this year? I mean, don't you think he might be filling his head with stuff like, hey, you need to pull, you know, like a John Elway or an Eli Manning and make sure you don't go there? Are you at all concerned that that might be happening?
Yes, I've actually had many of those concerns because I've seen the same media report everyone has that Caleb's, him and his dad said, oh, he'll just stay another year if he doesn't like the team with the number one pick, which we probably have the best chance to be, get the number one pick because we not only have our own and we're not going to have a good season, but we have Houston's who I don't think will have a good season. So if he's saying that, it makes me a little nervous that he is anticipating the Cardinals getting the number one pick and he wants to put it out now that he does not want to come to the Cardinals, which would break me because Caleb Williams looks like the next Mahomes. But we've seen, you know, crazy dynamic quarterbacks like that in college before they come into the NFL and then, you know, they're nothing special. So I don't know. But it's interesting to see whether what Caleb Williams will do and whether the hype will be real. It's a fun year for college football, I'll say that.
Oh, it is. It's the last year as we know it for all of the rivalries and everything like that. And I will say again, I am so thrilled. I'm going to give a plug for the coverage here. FDH senior editor Jason Jones covering the Colorado Buffs for Sports Illustrated. And again, it right smack dab in the number one story in the country right now with what's going on with that program. So very, very happy for that. And go check out his video coverage of it also on the After Further Review with Jones channel. But as far as, yeah, it's a wild year in college football. But this is one of these things where, I mean, in terms of taking Williams there, I would ask how does that even happen because you have the commitment to Murray, but you guys are the same team that took Murray the year after Josh Rosen. Now, I don't think there was nearly the same financial commitment to Josh Rosen that there is to Murray. And, again, teams are prepared to, you know, wiggle out of stuff, take a, you know, cap hit and whatever, and it's not going to be an immediate kind of a thing back with them anyways. But I will say this, that that's a situation with the Cardinals where sometimes a team goes out on a limb with a coaching change, and it works. Sometimes it doesn't. Philadelphia famously went out on a limb with Doug Peterson. I don't think he was getting a whole lot of interviews. And I remember in that off season, I remember FDH Lounge dignitary Joe Stazak saying to me on the show, "You guys got Hugh Jackson. He was the hot candidate. Nobody was even talking to Doug Peterson, and we got stuck with him." Well, turned out pretty good for them. I think they might have gotten slightly the better part of the bargain with a Super Bowl coach as opposed to Hugh Jackson.
But slightly.
Jonathan Gannon, I mean, let's be perfectly honest. Nobody else in the league was looking at him. So that's going to be an interesting thing here. And look, and he's a native Clevelander. And I'm still kind of putting the bad mouth on him a little bit because I'm not necessarily that impressed with the guy. What are your early thoughts on him?
I mean, I was a little nervous with just the content I've seen online, but after week one, I felt pretty good. That defense and that offense, they looked better under him than they did under Cliff. And I know that probably sounds crazy unless you've been tortured to watch every single game they've had over the last however many years, but it seems like the discipline's getting a little better. It seems like they respect the coach a little more, but at the end of the day, I don't want to make this a whole Cardinals podcast,
yeah.
But I'll just say that I think as much as I'm glad, you know, we got Jonathan Gannon, I think the bigger change was getting a new GM. And I think you saw that in the draft. But I do, to pivot away from the Cardinals, because they make me sad, I do want to, we kind of hit it up a little bit throughout this, but I do kind of think, and it's funny, it's the same kind of way in college, but for different reasons. It seems like it's a little bit of a changing of the guard year in the NFL. I'm not saying Kansas City is gonna go away anytime soon, but it does. Am I crazy for saying that, or do you feel that too?
I don't know. I mean, that's possible, but I think there's a strong case for continuity in some places. I mean, if Jacksonville is able to punch through and come out of the AFC, then that would be in it, which is something that some people, I think primarily hipsters, are predicting them to do. But, you know, there are teams that could possibly make a case for that. Or if Detroit is able to come through, which, again, one week in, so far so good is all you can say for them. By the way, just back to Houston and the draft picks here for a minute. I'm not sure that we've ever seen a fan base that could be as potentially pissed about two different draft things in one year. If they have a bad year, they lose their, well, they're losing their pick to Arizona no matter what. So if they have a bad year, they don't benefit from it. To which the Browns would be saying, yeah, boo-hoo, because we've been losing picks to you the last couple of years. So it's like, if the Browns give them a draft pick that could be in the 20s, which I think is a possibility, and they lose their own very high pick to Arizona, they're going to be pissed on both ends, Derek. That would be some high comedy.
Yeah, that would, I mean, it's, I guess it just depends. I mean, if they show promise this year, the fan base will probably be okay. Yeah. And I mean, if you do the smart things in free agency and all that, I mean, look at LA. They have a first round pick for like three more years, and they've, you know, they won a Super Bowl 2 years ago, and they look like they're kind of back after this year. So, or after week one, at least. So, you know, I don't think it's the end of the world to give up your draft picks.
That's one of those things. It's just such a weird thing. I've talked about this on the show over a period of time. And I can talk about this in different sports segments because it's the commonalities, the hometown. What is it about L.A. where it almost feels like every team is like Stars and Scrubs? They won the Super Bowl as a glorified Stars and Scrubs team. The Chargers have been Stars and Scrubs the last couple of years. The Lakers, most of the way through the last couple of years, have been Stars and Scrubs. The Angels, enough said. Like, what is it about L.A. teams across sports there? Maybe it's the whole thing like New York. You know, big market, you got to go for the star players, and then, you know, you worry about, you know, we'll fill out the rest of the roster later. We got guys that'll sell tickets. But, yeah, I'm not ready to pronounce the Rams back just yet. But, you know, it was interesting that a couple of no-name wide receivers stepped up for him this week here. So, you know, this could be a year where things start to change a little bit. But my greater sense is that we're probably approaching, I'd say, the medium point of this era of Kansas City, Cincinnati, Buffalo, Philadelphia, these teams in here. You know, I think, and again, these things a lot of times kind of tend to go by decades. The 2010s were an anomaly because New England stuck around as long as they did. But again, New England sprung to prominence right about at the start of the 2000s. So it's an odd kind of a thing, whether you look at the Cowboys in the 90s or whatever the case may be. You know, I think we're kind of, you know, I'd say at about the midpoint of the calendar of that, of these teams being up there. And there's the chance, again, for somebody else to punch through. I'd love to say that that's going to be Miami. I certainly think there's a non-zero chance it's the Browns after looking at what they've been doing, especially with this defense here. Could be Jacksonville, could be Detroit. And those are teams that, again, fared a lot better in my week two power rankings than I might have thought coming into this past weekend here. So it's interesting. You know, you've got these teams that are sort of on this gilded throne level here, Derek, but I feel like the teams that are ostensibly supposed to be right underneath them have an excellent chance to burst through and be right up there with them. I will say that.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree. I think it's, I don't think the Niners are going away.
Right.
I don't disagree. Yeah, I don't think the Chiefs are going away. But yeah, there's certainly a few teams that, you know, we could see squeezed through. So I don't disagree with you there. I'm always very interested when we can say, oh, is it a changing in the guard year? Just because I think that's what keeps sports exciting. College, no one wanted to see Alabama. People were getting tired of Alabama Clemson every year, and then Georgia comes up and they're now the dominant force. So yeah. I'd like to see something happen similar in the NFL. Obviously the NFL, there's a lot, you know, more parity. You don't have necessarily the same two teams in it every year, the same four like you do in college football. But yeah, I don't know. If the Bengals and the Bills, as much as I think those quarterbacks, I think Josh Allen and Joe Burrow will figure it out. It made my sensor of are we seeing a changing of the guard here, at least in some of the teams that have been dominant, maybe not all of them.
Well, and we talked about this off air, and this is maybe a good way to bring it full circle on, is the notion of week one and a thing of like whether you're looking at alarm on the one sense or if you're I would say intrigue on the other sense. Like I think alarm week one is much harder to buy into because, again, if you're just like doing the eye test on Buffalo or Cincinnati or whatever, you're given the big fat raspberry. But again, week one, circumstances for both teams, and in both teams we're going up against very good defenses. So I'm not much of a buyer on week one pessimism, but week one optimism, I think I am more of a buyer on, because you look at, again, what Detroit did, and again, you know, the circumstances were what they were as far as not facing a Kansas City team that had a full deck by any stretch of the imagination, but you really can't diminish what Detroit did that much going in there. And particularly, again, having turned over the backfield as they did, the running back position in the offseason and coming in, again, with the changes there. They themselves didn't have Jameson Williams week one. So Detroit did what they did. Cleveland doing what they did against Cincinnati. And that was a thing where, again, I felt like there was a lot of intrigue as to what the Browns were going to do, because this is basically what happens. Like, when the team has a year, it's kind of out of nowhere. 2018, 2020. The years when they've had the hype behind them, the wind in their sails, they've pretty much gone out and crapped the bed. And such was the case again this year, where the expectations from the national media were nil. What I was seeing on the ground here, again, was that they quietly had done a very good job of filling the holes and everything. And it's one of those situations where I think when teams come out and impress week one, it's a little easier for me to buy into that than on the pessimism. I can discount the pessimism a bit, but as far as teams potentially being for real, I'm more apt to believe in it. What say you?
I like that. I like the alarm and intrigue idea. I would like, if I was picking my alarm team and intrigue after week one, intrigue, I'm not going to say the Lions, even though that's kind of my initial thought, but I'm going to go back to something I said that we disagreed on. My intrigue is actually going to be the Bucs a little bit and Green Bay. The Buccaneers, I'm going to give them my intrigue team. Not that I think they're actually going to do anything, but let me see them in week two. I think there might be something hidden and special there. You know, sometimes quarterbacks that, you know, it takes them a little bit to find their niche. We saw it that one weird year where Sam Bradford had that awesome year. I think the Eagles, and Case Keenum had that awesome year with the Vikings, and they both fell off after that. I'm intrigued to see what Baker can do with the Bucs. And if I'm going to say my alarm team, this is going to be a weird one, mm-hmm. but I kind of think it's the Eagles, because I don't think they looked good. I think their defense looked good, but that offense would make me a little nervous. I don't think that game, and even going back to the defense, the fact that they let New England come close, I think I'm alarmed if I'm an Eagles fan, in the sense that I don't know if they're going to be as much of world beaters as they were last year. That team that played week one would not beat San Francisco, even probably with a broken Purdy.
I agree. And I say this as somebody where I thought that point spread was ridiculous. Like, that they were like, I find so many week one point spreads ridiculous, but then again, I don't generally do well on my week one picks. But like, I'm looking at the fact they're only laying four to New England. And I used to make the joke on the show that, like, if the Browns were playing the 78 Steelers week one and the Browns were hosting the game, then the 78 Steelers would only be laying 3 points. Well, it's a road game, don't you know? You know, like, I just find the week one point spreads to be so conservative on that. And in the case of Philadelphia, I mean, they were darn near right, because, you know, I looked at it, I was impressed that Philly came out, didn't play anywhere near their A game, and they still got away with a win. So I hear what you're saying, but that's a team that a lesser team would have just lost the game outright, like, say, Buffalo or Cincinnati, you know, or Kansas City, who didn't manage to pull out a week one win. So, you know, yeah, they didn't have as much in the way of intrigue points. For Baker, it's a thing where I just look at it like it's an aging roster. It was set up as a win now kind of a thing in the Brady era, and the Brady era is done. So I'm just wondering what kind of a fit it's going to be there. But, you know, yeah, that will be interesting to see. But as we go through, we've covered a good chunk of what happened here last weekend. Any additional thoughts on anything we didn't get to, Derek?
I think we covered everything. It's going to be a fun week, too.
It's going to be. It's there's a lot that's still yet to come here that's going to be very interesting. And, yeah, I will be loving watching it on Red Zone again this year. I went in for that NFL Plus deal when they made it available that way because freaking Spectrum took it away from me over a period of time here, as they did ESPN briefly here. At least I got that back. Albeit not in time for the U.S. Open. Don't get me started on that. But, yeah, so it was an interesting week one. And, you know, judgment day for a lot of teams here. I was interested to see come in. That Green Bay and Chicago game more than anything else, you know, because those were two teams that we didn't know what to make of either of them. So it was very interesting. We come out of it, like I said, with very decided opinions of like, oh, Jordan Love might be for real. And the Bears look like the same old Bears. So, you know, all these thoughts here, Derek, again, the next week or two or three, I think, will be much more revealing as far as which of our impressions stick and which ones don't.
100%.
We'll see how it goes. I look forward to getting you back on and catching up with you here during the season, and we'll continue to get your thoughts as we go along. Thank you very much for being on, Derek. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge. Mini episode 1655.